another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right, guys, we're back again, this time with Justin Eskar. He's the founder of Virtua Computers, which is a consulting agency, mostly Mac-based, right?
That is correct. Apple consulting agency here in New York City.
Awesome. So explain, you know, what got you into business ownership?
I was always a born entrepreneur. You know, growing up in the 80s, I saw people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, and I was so into computers as well that like that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to own a computer company. I mean, to prove my entrepreneurship, when I was in fifth grade, a good friend of mine, Evan, would make these like origami pencil holders out of paper, and I was like selling them to the other kids for a quarter piece and like giving him a dime, which means I was making 15 cents on doing nothing but like hawking these like paper pencil holders all over the place. And then throughout my school career growing up, I joined the Future Business Leaders of America in high school, and there was like a contest of like who could sell the most candy. And like, you would have thought I was selling drugs to these kids. I was like, yo, you want a box of Nerds? You want some Sour Patch Kids? Like, it was ridiculous. And of course I came in first because I was just always trying to like make the next sale. Went to school for business. I was the only member of the General Business Administration group, which was great and horrible come graduation when the dean of business was like, we have accounting majors. And all these kids were like, woo, and like economics, woo. And they were like, General Business Administration. I was like, woo. And I realized it was only me after 4 years of college. And then, you know, always trying to come up with new ideas, always trying to start ideas and tying it back to computers. And I graduated in 2002, was a mortgage broker for a while, trying to hawk mortgages. You know, rates haven't been this low since JFK was president. And people were like, were you even alive when JFK was president? And I was like, no. Moved my way through, and then just through a series of luck, ended up working for a Apple consulting agency in Manhattan. And unfortunately, that guy wasn't really great at business. And I was like, even at 24, I was like talking to people about trying to buy him out and do all these things. And, you know, I was like hawking G5 cases on eBay that we were getting for free because Apple was paying us and all this stuff. And so in 2008, I finally was able to break free of all that and start my own business.
It's a hell of a year to
do that. From there, Virtua Computers has just grown. Not only are we in New York, but we're in New Jersey, we're in Des Moines, we're in Miami, we're in LA. I started a software company called Autrive when we came up with an app called Sign My Pad, which was super popular around 2011, 2012, 2013, when apps were first coming out. I wrote a book about outsourcing because that's how we wrote Sign My Pad, because I don't know how to code. And then that led into doing a lot of TV work. And then I started a conference called the ACES Conference, which teaches the business side of IT consulting for Apple consultants. Because a lot of the times in IT, we go to IT conferences. Here's how you install a printer on 400 computers and stuff like that. Nobody was teaching business practices. And so we started that up. And then just around last year, we brought it all into one fold. We're now the Virtua Consulting Group, where we do IT support, software, education, and I consult with other MSPs to help them grow their business as well.
Wow. Okay.
So your tsunami of like business. Yeah. Take a breath. Your tsunami of like success started the earthquake of business downturn we've most of us have ever seen. Like you started in 2008. How was that? Yeah. How was that fighting through what was basically like the bleakest time you could have possibly thought of starting a company?
I was partially forced into it and partially not, right? So I ended up being let go from the company I was working for a week after I moved into a new, nicer apartment in New York City. The Friday before the Monday of Macworld, where the company was supposed to pay for me, but they didn't, to fly me to San Francisco. It was the release of the first MacBook Air. It was one of the last times Steve Jobs was on stage, so I got to see him there. And I came home and I called all of my contacts and I said, like, look, you know, I've always wanted to start a business. I've always wanted to do consulting. What can you do to help me out? I cashed in all my chips at that point. And I remember distinctly having a conversation with my mom and she was like, how are you going to do this? Do you think you can legitimately make, and she gave me an argumentative number, $95,000 a year or something like that, $75,000 a year. And I said, yeah, I can. And I made it my goal to do that. And so that was me, like I said, calling in all my favors, asking anyone who knew anyone who needed Mac support, anyone that I had worked with before. I was able to take a couple of my clients with me when I left, because they just didn't want to work with the old company. And I just hit the pavement. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk calls it the best when he says, eat dirt. That's what I did. I made phone calls. I got on every list. I started as an Apple consultant. There's a group at Apple called the Apple Consultants Network. It's a paid membership that you're part of. I started going to their meetings. They would have regional meetings for New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And they were in Manhattan. So I would go to their meetings. And I started becoming like a subcontractor for other consultants to get my name out there as best I could. And just kind of worked every hour that I could possibly work until I grew it to the point where now, you know, I have 6 staff. We outsource programmers, we outsource video editors, we have, you know, computers around the country that we're taking care of. We're doing this conference and all this other stuff. So like, it was just a lot. I mean, you can't get away from the hard work aspect of it.
So you have 6 employees right now, and you have how many locations? 5 locations, 6 locations?
So we really only have 2 offices, but we cover, cause before pandemic, I used to go to Miami every month, for a couple of clients. We have clients on there, and we have clients in LA that we go visit like probably once every 4 to 6 months.
Wow. So you can run this whole business without a very huge staff, but it sounds like you've got your core staff, and this is very similar to my agency. I've got my core staff, but then I also have contractors that I use when projects come up. So specialists for certain things that I know I can't do, you know, like I'm no programmer. I know how to talk tech, but I don't sit down and code anything. So I need other people when projects come in. They're flex workers, which I think that's the direction a lot of things are going anyway. Especially, I think COVID just, you know, sped up the process of what's going on right now. And I mean, you've got people right now living in Bali, graphic designers, you know, finding jobs on Udemy and some of these other things, you know, doing side hustles from the beach, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, and you can grow this thing, and technically you don't have to stay in New York. You don't have to be there. You could be pretty much anywhere and run this company, right?
Yeah, I mean, I actually live in New Jersey, which I don't really like promoting, but I could do this from anywhere. I mean, I think one of the things, especially with the pandemic, remote work and working from home is pretty norm for IT professionals. And now it's becoming the norm for everybody. And they're seeing what the IT professionals were always doing when they've been home all this time. So with the staff that I have, you know, we've mastered those communication tools. You know, you're using Slack, you're using Zoom, things like that. Even before the pandemic started, now, because of that, the tools have gotten that much better. I mean, think about how many new versions, every week there's a new version of Zoom to download with better encryption and more, you know, Snapchat filters and stuff like that to make these video interactions more human. So I could be anywhere, which is really nice about it. And I've also set up a couple things, you know, between the apps and I wrote a book. I actually wrote a children's book. That we outsourced all of the illustrations for, and then my wife did all the text of it. We put that up on Amazon. I have t-shirts that we do print on demand. So I have all these like different avenues that we do, but really I can work from anywhere. I don't necessarily choose to work from New Jersey. Don't get me wrong. I would much rather be like working in an apartment that faces the ocean. You know, that's the nice thing about being able to do what we do, and especially having all the tools at our disposal.
When it doesn't sound like this is something you necessarily did for the money. I mean, when you were telling your story about selling candy to other kids when you were younger, I did that, right? I was one of the only kids whose mom really didn't care. So I went up to the Sohio station. I don't know if anybody remembers Sohio, but I think BP bought them out a long time ago. But I would go up there and take my little red wagon with me. And I'd buy Now and Laters, those little packs of Now and Laters, and Boston baked beans and lemon heads for a nickel. And then I'd come back on my street to all the kids whose parents didn't like them eating candy, but gave them allowance money. And then I would just take all their allowance money, because we were broke. We didn't have any allowance money. So this was my way to make a little bit extra money so I could buy toys and things like that. Yeah, I mean, it sounded like you started out kind of with this entrepreneurial spirit, but it doesn't necessarily sound like you did this for the money. Like, it sounds like you just enjoy being your own boss and you enjoy creating businesses. And you've got a couple of these side. I mean, I wrote a book too. I got a book called Beyond. It's a sci-fi book. I have a co-author on it because, you know, I went to Cincinnati Public Schools, so I'm not the best writer in the world, but I can come up with the concepts, right? And it sounds like your wife wrote your book, right? And you, you know, you did some work on that as well. But and then we got the Teespring store for the podcast. So yeah, I mean, it's there's so many little ways out there to make money. And you're a successful business person, but you still have these little side hustles you're doing too. And if you weren't your own, if you weren't your own boss, you wouldn't have time for those things. You wouldn't even probably even think to do those things.
Yeah, that's, I mean, being my own boss and having, being able to spend my own time allows me the opportunity to come up with those ideas when I see new things or I hear new things. I mean, one of the things about being your own boss is that you need to take out time every day to learn, to do some sort of learning, to do some sort of growing. And so I try to go for a walk every day for at least a half hour. One, it's healthy, but two, I can listen to a podcast or an audio book and come up with an idea. And like, I was just listening to another podcast yesterday where the person they were interviewing literally said, the reason we have cybersecurity is to stop your servers from being stolen by a bear. And like, she didn't really know what she was talking about. She was kind of making a joke. So I came home, I texted my wife, I came home, and then like 10 minutes before we just started recording, I threw up on our Threadless store a picture of a bear stealing the server. And it says, don't let a bear steal your server. And I sent it to the guy who owns the podcast. And I was like, done. And he's, and he just bought two t-shirts. Like, there's $8 easy from a stupid idea that I made my wife waste, you know, 15 minutes grabbing some, you know, stock imagery and like putting a server in place, tagging it with our virtual logo and throwing it up on our Threadless store. If someone else buys one, great. If not, you know, whatever. What I don't like is the people though who tote that you can make, you know, $1,000 a day writing books and doing print on demand things. Those guys, what they're failing to mention a lot of times, especially because I see a lot of that on TikTok, is that like, yeah, you can put as many designs on, you know, Teespring or Threadless or whatever, or as many books you want on Amazon. Unless you tell people about it or you're putting something out that people want, it doesn't matter, right? My business book, people wanted, and I sold it, and I use it now as a business card. And my children's book that I wrote with my wife is about a kid with allergies. So like, if you read a book, if you have a kid with allergies, it's going to hit home with you. So like, you have to write and make content that people want. You can't just throw it up there for, you know, S and G.
Well, it sounds like trends, right? We keep hearing this thing about trends all the time with all these side hustlers.
Well, we also, to basically go back to like last week's guest and Blue North, is that if you don't study your market a little bit, give people what they want, you're wasting your time. You're spinning wheels that you don't need to be spinning.
Yeah. So, basics of marketing, understand your market. And it sounds like, I mean, look, you were just listening to a podcast. You saw an opportunity. You're like, wow, bears stealing servers. I know I could sell two or three t-shirts doing this. You didn't have to sell 10,000 t-shirts, but you could sell t-shirts right in that moment. I mean, the fly, yeah, like we were talking about the fly that landed on Mike Pence's head, dude. How many people had t-shirts like within an hour?
The Biden campaign within an hour created a fly swatter that they sold out of overnight from that.
And raised money for the campaign. Just, you know,
it's being in the moment and being aware. And I, not that you can't do this if you have a 9-to-5, because, you know, you listen to those people and they're like, oh, you work 9-to-5, you come home, you kiss the dog, you eat dinner, and then you work until 3 a.m. Like, I'm not that kind of person. But if you are, you know, kudos and more power to you, but you have to be able to use those hours. You can't just sit there on YouTube, you know, staring aimlessly into the void. You have to listen and look at things that will inspire you to help create these other items that you make.
So your consulting business, it sounds like you went out and you were like, okay, where do my customers live? You were already in the industry, and this is a lot of people. Myself included, I worked at one of these big agencies and I saw, they're just, you know, there's, and we were talking about this before the show, there's so many marketing, so many companies out there that need help, so many marketing agencies in town, and so much work, but we don't have enough people. We don't have enough talent here. So what ends up happening is people, it's so incestuous. People just go from one agency to the other agency, whoever's going to pay them more at the time, right? And I discovered that, hey, there's a need for an outsourced resource with all of these, you know, people who are independent contractors now because they've priced themselves out of the agency world. So I started my company based on that. And it sounds like you were like, hey, I'm working for a guy right now who, you know, knows his shit, but may not be the best business person in the world. And you seem super outgoing, which is a great personality trait for, I mean, you got to do sales, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to be, if you're going to be an entrepreneur.
I get called a New Yorker a lot when I'm in, I mean, I'm from New York, I'm originally from Long Island, and I get called, a lot of the times people are like, you know, you're a little too blunt. And I'm like, I'm not blunt. I'm from New York. That's just the way it is. And that's a little bit of like being a salesy kind of person and things like that. Knowing where to go. To be honest, for virtual computers, the IT consulting edge, we try to target two major industries, advertising, marketing, because that's obvious that they would use Macs. And also a big one that we really like is nonprofits, because we've built a lot of systems over the last 13 years that we've been in business, catering to that, to be able to provide a really good product to a nonprofit, all in, right? Taking care of their computers, their network, their printer, their firewall, their phone systems, their iPads, their iPhones, all that stuff. We've created an entire product. And I've been able to pitch that to multiple nonprofits, especially because one thing for nonprofits is you need to save them money, right?
Exactly.
So you can't just walk in there and say, I'm going to buy you $10,000 worth of new computers and $10,000 worth of new. No, you got to figure out how to make it work for them to increase their productivity so that way they can raise more money. You have to understand the business, and we can go to them with a better product where I introduce concepts like leasing or monthly payments on subscriptions or a different phone service than who they have, who's going to be cheaper. Understand the client, understand the market, like we're talking about earlier with the t-shirts. And then provide them the tools that they need to succeed. Because if they're going to succeed, they're going to hold on to you longer.
Do you ever feel like there's things like, I mean, I always, people ask me, oh, I want to start a business. I want to get something off the ground. Sometimes I've been doing this so long, I forget how I started out. Like I forget how I really kicked this thing off. And I think for people, you were self-motivated. I was self-motivated. But for a lot of people, they want to be entrepreneurs. They just don't know where to start. And how, I feel like that is the hardest part of having a side hustle, turning that into a main hustle. How do you get over that hump? Is it a mental thing? Is it what do you recommend? They like listen to Gary Vee, read the 4-Hour Work Week. Like, what do you recommend?
Well, for starters, I would say to those people, make sure that you want to be an entrepreneur and not a wantrepreneur. Make sure that you're not doing it because it's cool or it's the fad or it's the trend to be an entrepreneur now. Because when I wanted to be an entrepreneur, even in like the mid to late 80s, that was not a thing, right? In the mid to late 80s, you got a job at GE, you worked for 50 years, you got your gold watch, and you called it a day. Now, everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. You can flick through Instagram and see everyone has the title of entrepreneur, CEO on their thing. So for starters, make sure that you understand what this means, right? Because owning a business and being an entrepreneur like that takes one, a lot of guts. It's a huge risk, and it's an emotional roller coaster because you may not get new clients. You may not get what you want out of it. You may need to pivot your product. You may need to do these things. And people think it's just like, and to be honest, I have the same problem where I come up with a new idea and I'm like, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Everyone's going to love it. And then nobody does. And I can prove that because when I started my conference, I thought that all the Apple consultants in the United States, and there were 1,500 at the time, were going to come to this conference and learn all this great content that we had. We had an amazing lineup. And so I never ran a conference before. And I took a block of rooms at a hotel. And if anyone doesn't know what that is, you're guaranteeing that these rooms will be occupied at the hotel. And if you don't fill those rooms, they charge you for it. So I took a room block for 250 rooms. I had 50 attendees. Jeez.
Oh my God.
I ended up having to pay that hotel $20,000, right? That's because I didn't do my due diligence and I didn't think about it. And that's the risk. Now, I luckily had the ability to pay that, right? I've made enough with my other companies to cover for it, things like that. But that's a risk that you have to take. And people who want to become entrepreneurs, forget to do that, right? The people who make it the best are the ones who can do their own stuff. So like you hear about developers who make great apps. The way to make great apps is to be able to code. The reason SignMyPad doesn't exist anymore is it was starting to cost more to outsource code outsource program it, then I was making money on it. So it went by the wayside. But if I was coding it myself and it was a labor of love and I knew and I could make it better and work on it all the time and continuously make money on it, different story. So that's part of it, right? Anyone can come up with an idea, right? Start my thing for coming up with ideas are start writing them down, right? 99% of them will be absolute garbage, but you'll find one that you like really seem to grasp onto, and you can start, you know, you can do the Gary Vee thing where you start, you know, making videos about Smurfs or He-Man or Pokemon cards or whatever it is. You could create a product. There's easy ways to create products nowadays. You can do print on demand. If you're a creative and you know, you want to come up, you want to sell your designs, you can write books on Amazon. But again, you have to be able to market all of these items. Being an entrepreneur isn't just coming up with the idea. It's marketing, it's sales, it's finance, it's, you know, anxiety. It's all these things. You have to be able to take all of that on.
Yeah. The one, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, no, go. I would just keep going, but I got to stop talking.
I was going to say I've only done real estate development stuff. And the first job I did was with my own money. I didn't know how to use the banks properly. And we went over budget by like $100,000 on a $300,000 project. And that's the thing that was most eye-opening to me was what it does to your mental well-being and to your health from not sleeping.
Yeah.
You just don't sleep because you'll wake up, particularly if you have like a couple of bourbons or a couple of glasses of wine, and that anxiety ramps up like you were talking about at about 4 o'clock in the morning. You're like, holy shit, how am I going to pull this off? That's the coming to Jesus moment kind of as an entrepreneur where it's like, all right, I either got fight or I got flight. And that's, I think, where people really crash out. When it comes to starting a business is that they get the idea. The honeymoon's awesome. You got this. You actually got friends and family to think that it's a great idea. You maybe have some sales and then it's time to start growing. You got to start putting your name out there financially to, you know, whatever it is to produce or.
And are you willing to take those risks? Like, am I just a guy who likes to wake up at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock every morning, getting to work at 9, go home at 5 and watch my television shows? Like, if I'm that person, then entrepreneurship is probably not for me, right? But if I'm the person who hates that and hates the idea of working at GE until I'm 65 years old and I get my gold watch, if that makes you absolutely miserable, I think going through what you went through and going through some of the things Justin's talking about here, those are small in comparison to what my life could be, right? My life could be unfulfilled. Right. I work until I'm 65 years old. I can't think of anything worse. I mean, you know, when it comes to careers.
Oh, when it comes to careers, I was going to say, I could probably come up with a couple of worse things. I mean, for a career, yeah. The thing is this, right? You have to have a look. My love isn't for computers. My love, and I only recently came to grasp with this, and I've been doing this for a long time. My love is for building businesses and money, really. I then went through this whole thing where I was trying to, how do I bring everything together? And this is before the virtual consulting group. Let's take a couple of years ago. I drew a circle on a piece of paper, sorry. And I wrote computers. And then I wrote all these spokes because everything kind of stemmed from computers, right? Software comes from computers. The conference stems from computers. Consulting comes from computers. And I had to figure out how to tie them all together. That's what builds a bigger business. That's what builds a brand. That's what builds all this entrepreneurial. And I looked at that and I said, this is what I like to do, right? I worked for somebody. I wasn't keen on it. Now, just because you don't like working for GE doesn't mean you should go become an entrepreneur. Maybe there's something else you want to work for. You might like computers, but don't have the tolerance for the risk of owning a business, right? So, you know, you may just have to go through that path and find your way. But maybe at the end of the light, there is something there about owning a business. I always tell people this, and they say to me, the one-liner for I want to start my own business. I go, cool. How much money do you have saved up that I can put on your driveway and light on fire and you not suffer, you know, and not lose your house and not lose food off your table and stuff like that? How much money can you spend and literally light it on fire? That's how much you can risk on your business and not a dollar more, right? Because if you go too much, you go too further into it, now you're affecting your health, your well-being, your safety, and that's not okay.
Not okay at all. Yeah.
No, it sucks.
It's you got to have a high tolerance for pain. Like you gotta be able to
be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Be comfortable being uncomfortable. Yes. And yeah, it's definitely not for everyone. I mean, some people like that 9-to-5, but there are people who are working those 9-to-5 jobs that are miserable, and they may not even know why they're miserable. They may be entrepreneurs and just not. Or you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you're working at a 9-to-5 job or in corporate world, you may be getting bad reviews from your superiors. And you're like, oh, I just suck at this. There's other people that are just better than this at me. Yeah, those are the guys who got good grades in college and high school and all that. They're used to following this protocol. You may not be. It may not be because you suck. It may be because you're not supposed to be there.
There's an inner fire in you that hasn't been lit yet. And where you are right now is not doing it.
That's exactly right. So with this conference, did the conference that you created, and like you said, you created this wheel and you had all these spokes of the wheel, the conference being one of those spokes, did the conference then feed back into your business? Did you, I mean, you had 50 people there, but what were the results of that conference?
The results of the conference was that I was able to do 6 more. Right. And build a better name for myself in my industry and not necessarily with end users like the IT, the people, companies that we would take care of, but within the other Apple consultants who I work with. And that has gotten me, and I've been able to extend beyond that. So the conference, the first year had 50 people. The second year we had about 100. And then every year since, we've had somewhere between, let's say, 80 and 90. This year, notwithstanding, because of everything happening with the pandemic. What that has gotten me is a couple of things. One is we expanded at the conference. We started a mastermind program where we actually have had attendees for the last 4 years and like a good amount of them who pay a monthly subscription price. So there's money coming in from that. And we actually have a mastermind coach who runs that. So I don't actually even do a lot with that. I just get a little bit of piece of money. So there's some more passive income. I've also made a name for myself in the Apple Consultants network. You know, when you ask people, who should I talk to about starting an Apple consultancy? My name comes up constantly because I've built this brand around myself. And then now, the last year or so, I've opened up the consulting for consultants thing where I'm helping these other Apple consultants and other now Windows MSPs grow their business and talk to them about how they can grow their business. And that has led more people into me that way as well.
So you're a
subject.
And then
the last part of that is I've now found people, especially with everything going on, who have come to ACES, realize that they don't want to be the owner and the entrepreneur, and have come to me about selling me their business. And that's how we were able to expand into a couple of the areas that we've been able to expand into. So there's a lot of different avenues that have played off of that. None of them were my original goal, right? My original goal was to go get a bunch of people together and listen to some great speakers. But I'll tell you this, if you ever run a conference, don't do it for the information the speakers are going to give you, because you're going to spend the entire day running around going, is the air conditioner working? Is there enough coffee? Is everybody fed? Are the sponsors okay? Are the ticket holders okay? What's happening at home? Is my child okay? And you actually don't get to listen to any of the presentations that are going on.
Exactly. We did a conference, right?
Yeah, you guys did. It was pretty awesome.
So yeah, we did a blockchain, well, crypto conference is what it was called. That was Cincy Crypto, right? It was the first crypto conference, blockchain crypto conference, or blockchain conference, period.
But it was like an advertising conference for your startup.
Really, it kind of was. Yeah, it ended up being that way. But yeah, we started a conference. I had 2 weeks to plan it. Got 250 people here. But it was because crypto was so hot at the time. This was 2017, right. December, right before everything crashed. So here we are doing a conference on how awesome buying Bitcoin and stuff is. And then, you know, less than a month later, everything took a dump. But yeah, so we started this conference and so we just marketed it on Eventbrite. We had guys coming in from Omaha, Nebraska and all kinds of places, and Big Co people like Kroger had people here. Procter & Gamble had people there. So it was well attended by corporate as well. And, you know, I think it went really well, but you're right. I mean, I don't even remember a thing from anything the speaker said. I mean, I might have had 10 minutes of this half day conference, was able to understand what somebody was saying, because, you know, you're running around with the food situation and all this other stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, but now now you're a subject matter expert. Exactly how Justin is. Justin is the subject matter expert. So now everything he said says to people is gold. They're going to trust it.
Yeah, because he's the guy who threw a conference. Like, why would you throw a conference if you weren't a subject matter expert, right?
Well, and then all the connections he's made off of it. So now he's got all these other reputable people that were guests at his conference year after year. And they're like, ah, I know Justin. He's connected to, you know, so-and-so. The subject matter expert, I don't think it can be overstated how important it is to present yourself as one and have some credible sources, whether you write journal blogs or whether you hold the conference or whatever it is, so that people come to you first with the opportunities. And then you, from there, you're like, you know, it doesn't work for me. It's not big enough, but I have this guy.
Well, and just like our conference that we started, you know, again, people started inviting us to speak about, you know, cryptocurrency, digital money, things like that. They wanted us to kind of attend these things and say, hey, is this the new deal? Right. You should come in and talk about it at, you know, startup events and things like that. I'm sure you had stuff like that. But the thing is we did that conference when crypto was hot. Right. Justin, it sounds like you essentially rode this wave of Apple success along with Apple. You got in. I remember Apple was trading at $12 a share, and it was probably around 2004, 2005. I don't know. I remember it dumped and everybody was like, Apple's going to go out of business, all this craziness. But it sounds like you kind of got in at the right time. And then Apple, all of a sudden, boom, MP3 players.
So this is a true story. In 1992, I went to my grandfather and I said, Grandpa, I said, Papa, I want to invest in Apple, because he taught me about stocks. And I had a couple bucks in like Wendy's and like Marvel Comics, which also took a dump at the time. And I said, I want to invest in Apple. And he goes, nah, they're not going to make it. Had he done what I said in 1992, God, I would have been sitting on God knows how much money right now.
Yeah, you wouldn't even need any side hustles. You'd be doing all right. Grandpa would have took care of you.
I would own all of it. But yeah, the Apple market is an interesting market, you know, across the United States, for who's using it, stuff like that. And I find that the attendees of the ACES conference are more entrepreneurial mindset than the other Apple consultants who don't. And I don't mean any offense to anyone who's listening that is an Apple consultant. I've had conversations with many of you. I know why you do or why you don't, things like that. But the people who are coming are the ones who I think are hungry. They're the ones who want more. They want to do more. And not only with their Apple consultancy, they want to grow more the way I've grown and done these other things. In fact, I have a good friend of mine, this guy, Rich Ringfields in Texas. He has gone and taken his Apple consultancy and watched what we've done. And not saying that I caused this, but I'm definitely going to say I was an influence. That now he runs a group online for getting organized and getting things done. He's kind of like taken that GTD concept, made it his own, runs it as a thing called Go Bytes, now has his own mastermind group with that as well. He's seen what we've done and kind of taken and put his twist on it. And that alone, like, that makes me so happy to see him do that. I'm not making any money off of him. I'm not making any money off the GTD, though I should get a cut because it was probably my idea. But but like, it really makes me just happy to see him do that. And that, I think that supersedes my like desire for money, but I'm not sure how close.
So we got listeners that are brand new. They're scratching the surface. They're trying to see if this is something for them. They found an industry that they like. You've referenced masterminds twice. A lot of people do not know what masterminds are. I mean, I know when I was getting into real estate investing, I had no idea there were mastermind meetups, and I was like, that sounds pretty arrogant. What the hell is that? And then you find out how important they are. Can you go into depth about what a mastermind is and why you find it so important for your network and for the growth of your brand?
Sure. So a mastermind is group counseling. It's really like at the end of the day, that's what you consider it. It's group counseling, where you as a group are learning new things on the regular to enhance yourself, right? And so for the ACES people, for the Apple consultants, our mastermind group, we do three Wednesdays a month. One is a business coaching session where we talk about our goals and our expectations and how we can help one another. One is a roundtable where someone talks about a specific issue that they have in their business. And then the rest of the time, everyone's helping them out with that one problem. And then the last one, we have a speaker. So it's almost like continuing education. You're learning about new services or new ideas or anything that could help spark a thought. When you're an entrepreneur, the worst thing you can do is close out the entire world. You will never grow. So being able to talk to other like-minded entrepreneurs in a group setting is a lot easier than for a lot of people than a one-on-one. It also helps build your network in person, and you're paying you for it usually. And a lot of time mastermind groups also have accountability groups with them. So you make a statement like, I'm going to reach out to 50 new prospects. And if I don't, I'm going to give $1,000 to like some organization that I hate or something like that. And you have someone in your mastermind group hold that check. This way you're being held accountable. So there's a lot of different angles on the way to do it. There's some really, I mean, there's masterminds for everything right now. You got to have a mastermind in, women entrepreneurship. There's a mastermind in our advertising in New York City. There's a mastermind group for, getting organized and for Apple consulting and things like that. So all of these exist. Imagine a meetup, but of people who want to actually meet up, and it's not just someone on, meetup.com paying $5 to give you some pizza or something like that.
You're in the New York area, from New York. A lot of people that move to New York move from places like the Midwest, right? They come from places like Cincinnati, from Pittsburgh, from, Columbus, Ohio. When they get to a place like New York, I'm guessing some people just need a change, and they feel like, hey, I can't get my startup off the ground here in the Midwest. I need to go somewhere where the market's hot, or I need to go somewhere where I can get connected to people quickly. What would you suggest for people who want to move to LA, want to move to New York, want to move to Miami or Chicago, one of these bigger markets? Would you suggest maybe masterminds being one of the first steps, or how would you recommend they start out getting connected to people?
That's a tough one. When you move anywhere, you need to start building that network immediately, right? So, join a networking group of some sort, whether it's a BNI or something like that. Reach out to everyone you know on LinkedIn that's in the area that you're moving to, and just send them a message and say, hey, we'd love to get a cup of coffee. Can we, I just moved to New York. Can I just talk to you about, I want to know what your favorite pizza place is or something like that, right? Don't ask about pizza places unless you're in New York. But you got to build up that network, and joining a mastermind in that where you've moved to is definitely an easy way to do that.
So when somebody moves in New York, chances are, if you're connecting with other people, you're connecting with other people who've been in your position, people who've been in your spot, people who are from somewhere else, and they get it. Everybody, there's a perception that you mentioned it earlier. People in New York are a little, forward, or they're standoffish, or they're going to push you away a little bit. They kind of got that tough, I'm busy New York attitude. Is that the case?
You always find the ones who want to help. And you know what? You're going to have to hit 50, 100, 500 people on your LinkedIn, and you're going to get 1-2% of those who want to help you. And those are the ones you should hang on to, or follow up with the other ones later. And because maybe they are busy and do something. I mean, this is all, when the world opens up kind of a thing again. Yeah. But even with now, hey, can I get 5 minutes just to Zoom with you? I'd really appreciate it, just because I'm stuck on something. Find people. To be honest, I've had a lot of mentors my entire career. I found mentors just by listening to podcasts and then just reaching out to them, and then using that, and then finding out about their mastermind groups and joining their mastermind groups, and then meeting other people in those groups. You know what I mean? Whether it's mastermind or how you get in touch with people, it's all about networking. It's really, and that's how you build any business.
Well, that's how you said you built your business, right? Like, you started out just calling all your customers and people you were connected to. You grabbed a couple customers who didn't want to work with the previous company you worked for. I mean, that's, I think you just don't burn bridges too. I mean, those people must have liked you in order to come over and be one of your first customers. They must have liked the relationship that you had, and they thought you were professional, and they wanted to be your customer. And they probably saw, hey, this guy's out here trying to do something. I want to help him out. I think there's a lot of people out there like that.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the best that I love is when you work so well with a customer and somebody leaves that company, and then they go to another office and they bring you to that office with them. That's the best, because that means you did a real good job, that they even, that someone, you know, who may not have been your point of contact or the owner or whatever it is, you know, someone who's in a lower position moved to another company and brought you in because you made those relationships. We do what we need to do to establish those relationships also. And what I mean by that is, if we find out that one of our clients is having a kid, we'll send them a custom, going back to the print on demand, we'll send them a custom onesie with a laptop with milk falling, you know, spilt on it. And it says, "I don't cry when I spill milk. I call virtual computers."
Love it.
Right? We just send you a gift. When it's your birthday, as long as we know it's your birthday, our operations manager has virtual computer stationery. We handwrite happy birthday cards. We send you a cutting board that says congratulations when you get married. We do those little touch points. And sure, some of it costs some money, you know, not a whole lot, but you think about the longevity of that relationship and what it could potentially mean. Now, granted, every person we've sent a onesie to, I can't say that they've gotten us more business, but, you know, it definitely says something, because they take a picture of their kid in the onesie and that's in their photo rolls forever. So whenever they do a screen flow of their stuff, or when their kid's having their, you know, confirmation or bar mitzvah or quinceanera or whatever it is, and they're doing, what are those called, the slideshow of their kids, and they show them, "Oh, he was so cute as a baby. Oh, look, he's wearing a virtual onesie." You know, you never know when it's going to hit.
That's a really good point. And it's called a gift of obligation, right? And a lot of times when you go to meet with a car dealer or you go to anywhere, they, "Oh, do you want some water? Do you want a coffee?" Whatever, it's that gift of obligation. And subconsciously, you feel like you owe them something.
Well, there's a saying that I like to give to the guys that train underneath me in sales, is nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. So that you build that trust just by something as simple as sending a onesie. They're like, "Oh, this guy gives a shit about me. Great. This is somebody that I can actually have a personal relationship with. He's just not about my money."
Well, and it's cool that, you know, he's doing the t-shirt thing, because that's another one of his side hustles. So he can turn his knowledge in how to print on demand t-shirts into supporting his other business.
Build loyalty.
And it shows too, because when I had my first kid, my clients sent me gifts, so one of my clients actually gave me money, which I thought was ridiculous. Like, these are clients who are paying me for a service, and they're sending me congratulatory gifts and all these presents because we had a baby. And even when we had our second kid, some stuff also. I remember going to office, and we sent, the baby announcement. I would go to my clients' offices, and my baby announcement was on their fridge. You know, like, that shows that kind of relationship you have. We do the same thing around the holidays too. This is a good one. If anybody wants, this is probably one of the best holiday gifts we did. Was we went to a website called minifigs.me, minifigs.me. You can make custom Legos. So I made a Lego kit, and I'll take a picture of it if you guys want to show this in the show notes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I made a Lego kit of my crew and me with a laptop, like a screaming face. You can pick the head, the body, the pants, the hair, the whole thing. And you could have a custom printed Lego. So we had Virtua with our phone number on it. And I made like 20, 25 sets. And I hand delivered them in a box with paper and the whole nine to each one of my clients for the holidays. And to this day, it still sits on their desks.
How am I just now finding out about minifigs? I have
nothing from this phone.
He's got kids.
You got minifigs.
I have twin 19-year-olds that were Lego fanatics. Man.
Yeah, you could.
I slipped.
You missed that one.
I robbed their childhood.
You missed that trend. Yeah. We went to Hershey, Pennsylvania about a month ago, and you can make your own candy bar there. And they actually, you can watch it and videotape it kind of going through and adding the ingredients.
That's awesome.
And then it fills it with chocolate. It fills the top with chocolate. And then it goes through like a cooling thing to get it all in and then packages it and prints. You can watch it laser printing on the package, and you design the package before you even go into the room. So
we did chocolates 1 year for our clients. I made custom chocolates. I bought a couple molds. An apple mold, and I had some letters, and I wrote virtual, and I got a keyboard molded thing, and we sent them with a hammer, and we said, "Go ahead and break this one. We don't mind."
This is fun stuff. This isn't like, you know, you don't feel like you get to come up with these cool ideas of things that you could do to keep your clients, right? To get them more loyal to what you're doing, but also it's just fun to do. It's something on a weekend, maybe like a family thing. I mean, people are learning, you know, things on Pinterest, how to make recipes with their family or whatever. But I mean, on the weekends, you could be doing something similar, but it could be something totally geared towards growing your business.
And all of the, again, the part of this is that they're all touch points, right? And they all enhance your business. I'll leak you guys a little bit of information. Right now, something that we're working on internally is my goal for 2021 is to reduce virtual computers' carbon emissions as a company by 25%. That includes cutting, you know, doing some whatever we need to do to cut away from gas emissions. If I ever travel, the electricity we're using for all of our computers, everything you see here in my studio, all that stuff. I'm doing that because one, I'm part hippie and I believe in the earth. And two, I can't lie. There's a marketing aspect of it. And there's another touch point because now we can go to our clients and say, hey, look what we did. Let's offer this to help you as well. And you build these touch points from there, right? Anything you can do, they're not business. They're not like, I'm not fixing your computer right today, right? But I'm doing other things to enhance my business, enhance my relationship with you, enhance my potential relationship with future clientele. All of these things add up. And that's what entrepreneurship is.
Love it. So
I would drop the mic, but it's an expensive mic.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. So you've got this little studio set up in your house here, right?
Yeah.
And we were going over it right before the thing, and you were talking about all the cool gadgets you got there and everything, and you're using your Mac knowledge to even build out your studio here, right?
Yeah, and now I'm working. I don't know when this is going to drop, but the day we're recording, the new HomePod Mini comes out with Siri built in. So I actually have Siri control the lights that are behind me and the lights that are under my desk and things like that. And I'm building into those home automations to make this studio system better. And actually, I learned that from a YouTuber that I watch who I found really interesting how he built his YouTube studio. And not that I copied his ideas, but, you know, learning all that stuff, taking... I have a running to-do list I build in Asana. And in my to-do list, I have spend 10 to 20 minutes a day on YouTube learning something about, and for this month, it was learning something about building a YouTube studio. So I try to change it up. So that's how I learned about, you know, the right light that you can see shining on me. And yeah, I need a second one. Or this overhang here, which you can't really see. I'll bring it into frame for my like unboxing videos or how to place these Edison bulbs, things like that. You spend 20 minutes a day over the course of a month. You don't realize how much you've learned. And again, we talked about that earlier. Do something every day to enhance your own skill set and your knowledge base, and that will make you a better entrepreneur.
You were talking about the 80s and all this other stuff. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Udemy. Yeah. We didn't have any of these places to learn these skills. I mean, we keep bringing it up. I mean, at Facebook, you don't even need a college degree really to work there anymore. I mean, as long as you've got the skills and you can pass a coding test, you could probably work there. So I think a lot of people nowadays, not me, but a lot of people take for granted how easy it is to access information. And you could just overlook that. It's almost like, you know, you drive by 5 McDonald's, you don't even realize how many McDonald's you just passed because you're so used to seeing them.
I can prove that. I can prove your theory because my son is 5 and I have his iPad since I'm in Mac. I have it fully managed. We can't do anything that he's not allowed to do. But he's on YouTube watching Mark Rober, who's a well-known he's an ex-NASA. He used to work at the Jet Propulsion Library. And now he makes YouTube videos. You guys know him. He did the glitter bomb.
Oh, that guy is awesome. Guy. Yeah, the NASA guy. Yeah, guy, right.
Mark Rober. So if you ever listen, my son loves your stuff, but my son is 5 and he's watching science videos, you know, from a guy who used to work at NASA. When we were growing up, like that was never possible. I can't imagine what in 20 years, when my son is now 25, what his YouTube studio or whatever it's going to be is going to look like.
And I want to talk about that because Ash Patel, who's a commercial real estate developer we had on the show, family of immigrants, built a $20 million commercial real estate portfolio here in Cincinnati. You know, the guy just hustles. He drives his kids around when he's looking for property and says, what do you guys think about this right here? And the kids are like rattling off stuff adults wouldn't even know, right? So he's handing this, his knowledge, right, off to his kids, even though he doesn't, I think his wife's a doctor, right? Mm-hmm. Even though his kids are probably going to grow up and, you know, maybe follow in her footsteps. He doesn't know, you know, nobody knows right now. But he's teaching them these things that, you know, most parents, if you're working a 9-to-5, probably can't teach their kids.
It was a while ago when I learned this concept, and I'm trying to impose this on my son, but granted, he's 5. This particular person watching said to his son, for every business book you read, I will give you $10.
I saw that. That was awesome. Yes, that's how he gets his allowance.
By the time he was 13, he had his own business. And so I'm trying to get – my son, who's five, who, like, you know, we're first trying to teach him how to read, to do that stuff. So what we've done instead is, I don't want to tell his idea completely because I don't want him to steal it. But we sat down and we were like, you know, his name is Rome. I said, Rome, what do you want to do when you get older? And he's like, I want to own a toy store. And I was like, well, toy stores are not really a thing anymore. And then I had an idea. I have a 3D printer. He wants to make toys. Let's see what we can do to make that work. And then he had a couple, and then we played through some scenarios to where he came up with a new idea that even I never thought of. I went to my wife and she's like, this is brilliant. He's five. And so we're in the process of building out his new business. He's five.
That's awesome. Right?
But he sees daddy works and daddy owns his own business and daddy has clients and mommy works and mommy manages people and mommy runs, you know, has these advertisements that are going out and helps film, you know, shoot these products and introduces new products to the world at her company. He got that through osmosis or whatever. And don't get me wrong, he's five. He wants to go watch Pokemon or play soccer or do whatever five-year-olds do. But at the same time, he came up with the idea for a new business. I've never been prouder as a father.
That's awesome. Well, it's crazy too, because I mean, by the time he's in college, I mean, Amazon may have 3D printers set up there. So when somebody orders a toy on Amazon, Amazon prints it right there and just throws it in a box and sends it off. I mean, That could be where we're headed with this stuff. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Amazon to turn into a manufacturing company.
It's there. The ideas are there. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, like if you want to start a business, I got this idea for a business for my five-year-old. Like ideas are there. You just have to be able to, I like to say you got to risk it for the biscuit. It doesn't really mean anything, but
yeah, just, well, we're all getting to the point where we're the old people now, right? Like we're not the ones who see opportunities anymore. I mean, when I was, you know, 10 years ago, I remember seeing 10, 15 years ago, I was thinking the other day, man, I remember when I used to see opportunities everywhere to make things better. Right. I mean, we eliminated the fax machine in the real estate industry. We created digital contracts, and that did away with, you know, now what is it, 90% or something of all real estate agents.
That's actually how I came up with Sign My Pad, right? So, okay, true story. 2011, the iPad had like basically just came out, and they had at this point now they had just opened up the App Store. There were not very many apps on there, and for virtual computers, we were doing these paper work tickets where we would write down what we did. Twice we gave a client, they kept one, they signed one. And I lived in a studio apartment in Manhattan, which is not very big. And I had all this paper. So one day I'm using my iPad in the bathroom because, you know, that's what you do. And I was playing with like this painting app and I was like drawing my signature in this painting app and something just clicked. And I said, how do I take these work tickets that I have and have them be digitized and let people sign? And so my wife and I drew up a flow chart. We went to an outsourcing website and found a programming company in India, and they built Sign My Pad, and I processed it through the Apple App Store. I didn't even know it got accepted. I think we pushed it out on a Monday. It takes a couple of days for apps to be accepted. Thursday night around 8 o'clock at night, I get a phone call from someone from NBC asking if they can use Sign My Pad so that way they can have their extras who come in and out sign off on it and how it worked. Like they wanted instructions on how it worked. I said, how did you even find me, let alone my phone number, let alone the app that I literally just made up and put on the store on Monday?
That's actually scary.
Apple, that's what happens when you work at NBC and you know Apple. But the fact is that's how it got out there, right? I made Apple at work, paperwork. Law magazines were writing about this on my pad on a weekly basis, right? In fact, when I went to go buy my house, the mortgage guy was like, I'm going to send you these papers. I was like, send me a digital version. And I signed all my paperwork for my house with Sign My Pad.
That's awesome. That's funny. You did a digital signatures company too. That's pretty wild. Speaking of trends, right? Speaking of fads and things like that, I think by the time some of these money-making side hustle schemes get on YouTube, it's already saturated. Like at that point, you're good luck, right? Selling things on Teespring, stuff like that, for things, you know, you can find a trend, sell a t-shirt quicker than other people. Maybe you make some money, right? But that may not be the, you know, you can't really pioneer things on there anymore the way you used to be able to. So are there any trends out there that you see might not be worth pursuing versus things that you see coming up that side hustlers should start paying attention to?
You know, I'm not really deep into the trends. I know, you know, a lot of, especially the younger generation, you know, I'm 40. So I say younger generation, I mean 30 and younger. A lot of them, the big trend right now is the FIRE trend, financially independent, retire early trend. That is hot right now. Everybody's a financial advisor on YouTube. And, you know, I watch a couple of them. I'm a big fan of like the Graham Stephan show and stuff like
that.
Graham
Stephan's awesome.
But they're all following that trend. And then whatever, you know, a lot of people hang on every word that Gary Vaynerchuk says. Pokemon cards are coming back. He's making sports cards valuable again. You know, they were popular when we were kids in the 80s, and then they weren't in the 90s and the early aughts, and now they're popular again. In terms of trends, yeah, you could ride a trend, like you said, you know, make a t-shirt, make a couple bucks. Your trend isn't going to be making t-shirts. Your trend is whatever's going to be on that actual t-shirt at any given time. The business as a whole would be, I make t-shirts at a moment's notice because I can design quickly and do whatever. I wouldn't try to create a business around a trend. I would try to capitalize on those trends to enhance a business that could last a lot longer. You know, podcasting, people thought podcasting was going to be a trend, and it's been around now, what, 9-10 years? And we're slowly finally moving our way into doing more video podcasting, which is why we're recording on Zoom and we're able to put it up on YouTube. That's going to be big. VR is always going to be a big thing. AR, dealing with home automation, virtual computers. We actually went and we got an Alexa app. We made an Alexa app because we could, where we have this thing called 365 days of tips. You can go in the Alexa store, you can buy it. You can ask Alexa for a Mac tip and she'll read it from our list that we have. Those are going to be the upcoming ones. Everyone right now, everyone's hot on like Robinhood and Webull and financial independence. And the fact of the matter is that there's only certain things that will guarantee you longevity. And those are the things that have always been around. You know, computers are just going to get better and better, but someone still needs to support them. Real estate's not going anywhere anytime soon. Even if we move into big buildings where everything's in one building, people still need to buy and sell, you know, furniture and clothing and artwork and departments themselves. I wouldn't try to build a business on a trend. I would try to find out where those trends stem from and build a business around the longevity component of it.
That's great. All right.
Is it? Because I felt like I was rambling.
No. I think that's a really good point. I mean, yeah, trends, you can actually ride waves of trends. I mean, you've been riding a long wave of the Apple trend. I mean, Apple's here to stay at this point, right? I mean, when you started this stuff out, it might not have been the most popular. And then who could have guessed they would have come up with, you know, the world's best MP3 player back in the day, right? So, and that really helped boost them. It took them to a whole nother level. They stepped away from just the computer thing and into music. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you got this Teespring thing. You leveraged that to support your other business by promoting yourself. And then, you know, guys walking around with a t-shirt, or like you said, they're at somebody's bar mitzvah and, you know, you got a t-shirt with your logo on it and they're like, oh, wow, what's going on there? Who's that company? Right. So right. I think, yeah, definitely you can use these things to support stuff, but you know, just what would you suggest to people? What would be the next step for someone to take? If they were working a 9-to-5 job, do they look for opportunities in the career that they've chosen? Do they just look for inconsistencies in the business, ways that they could potentially save a business money? I always tell people, just look around, look for opportunities, just stay awake and look for opportunities. What do you say?
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one. In fact, if anyone does buy my Capitalize on Your Idea book on Amazon, the first couple of pages is all about coming up with an idea. And there's so many opportunities for people who actually have a 9-to-5 to look for those holes in the business, right? So you mentioned it earlier when you're talking about real estate. One of the biggest holes in real estate was that paper was a waste and you wanted to go to digital, to bring it to a digital transformation. Back then, that was a hole that needed to be filled. Now everybody since has done that, but there are plenty of opportunities for you and when you work to find something. Like I make this as a joke, but I say, like, how many times have you gone and looked for, you know, the tape at your office and the tape dispenser is empty and no one's refilled it or whatever it is. Why can't you invent the endless tape dispenser that always refills itself or automatically reorders tape when from Amazon when it's low and can like these are it might be so far out of bounds, but that's how you come up with ideas at work, is by coming up with so many new ones.
That's right.
And that's not my concept, right? I'm not going to take credit for this concept, but that's how you can keep building that idea muscle like any other muscle in your body, and you keep looking for those opportunities. Inevitably, you're going to come up with one or two that like may actually grow legs and may have some sustainability with them that you can make that into a business.
And young folks they're the ones who are seeing these things. Like, I mean, when we started Dot Loop, Austin, my co-founder, he came up with the idea. You know, he was a real estate agent at 18 years old. He was like, why am I faxing things still? Like, we have the internet. What's going on in this industry where I'm faxing stuff? So then he pulled us together and said, hey, we want to build this thing, or I want to build this thing, and you guys can help me.
Well, young people are, I don't know, a little bit more open-minded, I guess, looking for new ideas. They aren't stuck in their ways of how they've been trained at their job or
how to think,
or they're too busy with their business that they have now, if they've been successful as an entrepreneur. But people our age, the gray beards, but not the pepper beards.
Yeah, we're
not the gray beards. We're the pepper beards.
I shaved mine a little bit. Yeah,
there you go.
We're still looking for. Maybe not. We may not have the idea to start it up, but we're still looking for the opportunity to grow our money in a new idea. We want that fresh. I mean, anybody can put money in Amazon or Tesla and have no say or whatsoever,
but
and
it's
just
still
watch it grow.
Yeah,
it's passive income, but it's boring as hell. We still want the adventure, the excitement of the potential loss. So there's still.
Well, I have those opportunities too, right? For virtual computers, the reason I started Aces was that I wanted to figure out how to grow my business, right? And I went to these other IT conferences and I asked other Apple consultants, what do you do for ticketing? And what are you doing for marketing? And what are you doing for, how are you hiring your next employee? And like, no one had a good enough answer. And it really, I found the hole there that these people needed the information also. So I started a conference and got professionals from outside of IT to come and speak to them on how to do that, right? On a smaller scale, if you don't want to go as far as doing a conference, I had issues with my clients who they wanted an inventory of all of their equipment, not just their computers, but they wanted inventory of their networking equipment, their Synologies, their Chromebooks, whatever. And there was no good tool out there to do it. So I went on Upwork to go hire a programmer and I said, this is what I want. And now we have a tool called Your Computer Inventory, and I sell it to other consultants as well as use it myself for my own clients. So there was a hole there. I filled the hole. So this way my clients are happy. And also I'm making 10, 15, 20 bucks per user for the people who are buying it as well. So it's paying back for itself. I'm using it myself, so I'm getting the most gain out of it, and eventually will become passive income. So there's always opportunities in every job you do, even if it's not a 9-to-5.
Well, and that could have easily just been an expense for your company, right? But you got creative.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, wait a minute, I'm an entrepreneur. Why is this an expense? If I need it, other people need it. Totally makes sense. Well, Justin, I really appreciate your time today. I know you're a busy guy. I mean, you've just laid out all of these things that keep you busy, and sounds like you've got kids keeping you busy too.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever decide to take a trip to the tourism capital of the world, Cincinnati, Ohio,
Hey, it's actually pretty cool here. Believe it or not. It's actually really cool.
I've been told.
Yeah.
And today, actually real quick, because we're recording on a Friday, I make the Aces people do gratitude Fridays, which is, we all have to state something we're grateful for. So I'd love to know what you two are both grateful for today.
I'm grateful for this podcast. I'm grateful for the ability to be able to spread this information and from people like you, Justin, who can get people motivated and get people excited about starting something.
The easy one is I'm grateful for my wife and kids, which I am. But I was thinking about this the other day. I'm grateful that I finally got comfortable with my own skin, like who I am and not giving a damn about what anybody else thinks about me and, taking risks. You know, I've never been a successful entrepreneur, but here I am on a podcast about entrepreneurs and giving advice that I've been given from other people. And it's a really nice feeling. You know, you finally figure out who you are. It's
That's awesome.
Yeah. It makes you feel obviously a little bit more complete, a little bit wholer. That's not a word, but it is now.
Yeah. Well, they said Michael Jordan would be a terrible coach because he's just so naturally good at what he does. So it's one of the reasons you're on this podcast is because you take a different approach than I would take and Justin would take, right?
Yeah, so you that's called the wrong one.
No. You answer. You ask questions. You're asking questions that I may not think to ask, you know? So what are you grateful for, Justin?
I'm grateful today. I'm going to give my grateful to Brian Burke, who was a guest on one of your another episode, who actually introduced me to so I can be here. And I'm always grateful for opportunities and for all of my clients and, of course, my family and everyone. And to be honest, my big gratefulness is for anyone who can be home and safe right now in today's world.
Yes.
Things are crazy, but there's still opportunities out there. Please go find them. And if you need help finding them, get on a podcast with you guys and you guys will help them figure it out.
That's right.
Well, we've got the Facebook group. Is there any way to contact you, like not personally, but like if people have questions that besides, I mean, pitch your book, obviously the book will help, but is there any other way? Do you have like a Facebook group for your mastermind or anything like that?
Not for the mastermind, but the best way to find me is the virtuaconsultinggroup.com, V-I-R-T-U-A consulting group. So there's two G's.com. You can find out about all of our services. You can find out about the IT computers. You can find out about consulting. You can find out about ACES. You can find out about our software. And I think my book is on there, but just go on Amazon and search my name, Justin Esgar, E-S-G-A-R. You'll find both my business book and my children's book.
Awesome.
That's great. And I guess anybody can search you on LinkedIn and find you there as well.
I think I'm the only Justin Esgar that's out there, though. I do know there is one other Justin Esgar who lives in Texas, but I've ruined all of his social media by using my name for everything. So if you land on him, I don't know if he's going to be able to help.
It's like Kyle Stevie. There are no other Kyle Stevies out there.
Believe it or not, there's a lot of Adam Kaylors. I don't know why that is, but anyway, yeah, Justin, I really appreciate your time.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, sir. Bye-bye.